Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome in to the Rockies Insider Podcast. I am your host, Patrick Lyons, live from Dallas, Texas, home of the 2024 winter meetings. And it's late on Tuesday night, second show of the day, coming from the second hotel room in this hotel, because that first one was just too noisy right next to the highway on the exit ramp. The hotel is situated on the exit ramp. I'm on the other end of other half of the hotel, much more conducive. And I got to put this one on wax. A lot of stuff going down at the winter meetings as it pertains to the Colorado Rockies, some major transactions, more of those Nolan Arenado rumors kicking around. And maybe by the time it strikes midnight here in the Central Time Zone, there'll be a few more deals trickling in. We just got one between two clubs in opposing leagues, one of which plays right here in the Dallas, Texas area. But let's get things started with the guy that was somewhat of the focal point today. Monday, it was announced that the Chibolote Marines, his team over in NPB, were going to post him for all 30 major league teams to bid on. And today, his agent, Joel Wolf, an agent to a lot of other Japanese superstars and free agents and players who are on deals right now, but are the subject of a lot of trade conversation. Joel Wolf did talk about Roki Sasaki and what he's looking for. Roki, despite the fact that he could make a lot more money if he were to wait two more years until he was 25 years old, similarly to Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who got $325 million from the Los Angeles Dodgers over the course of 10 plus years. He could have waited two more years. But during those 2 years, could Sasaki have possibly undergone some major arm surgery, shoulder issue? He's already been banged up a little bit in the recent past. And so there's some questions about his durability, but he's healthy, relatively healthy at this point. So now is the time to go over. Shohei Ohtani was able to do it, bet on himself. He's going to make a couple bucks, I imagine, anywhere from $5 to $10 million in signing bonus during the international signing period. And he'll be making the league minimum for a little while, going to the arbitration process. He'll reach free agency after, I believe it'll be his age 29 season. So he'll still be a young man that can go out and make some serious paydays. But he wants to get that clock started, and that's really important for him. And it also allows him to contribute to a team, as I said, for the first 3 years at the league minimum before he's even touching arbitration. So that is of serious benefit to any team that ends up signing him. They're getting a superstar player. They're getting what very well should be an all-star, a multi-time all-star. They're getting that player on the cheap that allows them to use a lot of resources elsewhere. I've even created a scenario in my own head whereby Sasaki does not wait until January 15th. January 15th is when the new period starts over and everybody, their money gets reset. Their money doubles and triples, and hey, everyone's back to square one where they've got all the money that they're supposed to have that they can utilize on the international free agent market. 16, 17, 18-year-old kids from Latin America is typically what you see. But you got a 23-year-old player from Japan, multi-time all-star, has no-hit ability anytime he steps on the mound. And Sasaki has a lot of value because of that. So if he is actually able to maybe come together with a team and take $3, $4 million, the highest a team has, I think, is under $4 million. But you can still trade and acquire international bonus pool money. Some finagling would have to be done. But if you were to find a way to sign before January 15th, that allows the team that he does sign with to go and use their normal international bonus pool money on January 15th as they were supposed to see fit. They don't have to tell everyone, go home, go find deals somewhere else. And now we have an entire year where we don't have an international class of prospects. Yeah, we got Roki Sasaki, but we don't have that international class that teams typically do have. And a lot of teams like the Rockies rely upon. And you look at right now their top 30 prospects, and so many of them have come from the Latin American route, from that international signing bonus route, international free agents. Yankiel Fernandez and Adiel Amador being number one and number two. Robert Kalash is another one, young outfielder, only 19 years old. So three of the top 11 or 12 of the Rockies' best prospects have come from this avenue. So could Sasaki maybe come together in some kind of pact before January 15th? Absolutely, it's possible. He'd be leaving a lot of money out there, but he would certainly be helping his next team that much more. Now, what team does he want to go with? Everyone seems to think that the Dodgers are a foregone conclusion. Padres also probably have to be right there due to his really close ties and friendship with Yu Darvish. And I think the Padres are probably the most likely option for Sasaki. But Joe Wolf said that in due part because of how difficult the Japanese media has been, or how scrutinizing that they've been on a young player like Roki Sasaki, who came onto the scene even as a high schooler, even before he was a professional, there were really high expectations of him. And so because of that, a smaller market might actually be a much better fit for him. A smaller market might offer him a softer starting point. In fact, Shohei Ohtani even said in 2017 that he was looking for something on the West Coast or maybe a small market. And he, in many ways, kind of got both. Yes, he was in LA, but he was in Anaheim. He was an LA junior, just like the New York Mets. In many ways, and Mets fans, I'm sure, are not going to be happy when I say this, but the Mets are almost New York junior. Now, still, New York junior is still a lot harder than anything a lot of players from the Colorado Rockies have to deal with. But it's not the number one. It's not the tip of the, it's not the tip of the spear in the same way that places like Boston, Philadelphia, the New York Yankees, throw the Mets in there, the LA Dodgers. And there's also periods where other large markets really get scrutinized. So Ohtani was interested in maybe a softer spot. There certainly was a lot less attention on him playing in Anaheim for the Los Angeles Angels versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. That was of benefit to him. And so Sasaki could be looking at one of these smaller market clubs. West Coast, you'd have to think, is most likely, but it's not totally ruled out that he could go on the East Coast. Don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. Got to listen to everybody, hear what the packages are. Maybe he falls in love with the city and reminds him of where he grew up. Those things do happen. I know for the Christmas time, Joel Wolf, his agent, said he's going to go back over to Japan, spend some time with family, and he's going to come back here and start talking with some teams. And one of those teams that somewhat surprisingly he could end up engaging with could be the Colorado Rockies. Now, I was doubtful at first. I still have my doubts. But from what we learned on Monday, I asked Bill Schmidt point blank about talking with Joel Wolf, talking with Sasaki's agent about Sasaki, and Schmidt said, yeah, we've had conversations. He left it at that, short answer. Last year, at this time at the winter meetings, I was asking Schmidt about the international scouts that the Rockies have. They do have them, no boots on the ground over in Japan. They do have some connections. And so ultimately, they weren't really in on Yoshinobu Yamamoto this time last year. They also didn't have that money to go around and throw at a player of his caliber. But now money is not an issue. Money is not an issue in the same way as it was with a true free agent. Sasaki is an international free agent. So he is limited with how much money he can make. And the Rockies have one of the larger bonus pools money. Bonus pools, period. They've got one of the larger funds of money. Again, it's getting late. You can hear it. And so there's a chance. And one of the things that Wolf did say, somewhat off the record, but also to my colleagues, Patrick Saunders and Thomas Harding, who were there, that Bill Schmidt was, in fact, one of the first three, in fact, GMs, front office personnel, to contact Joel Wolf about Roky Sasaki. That means a lot. Believe it or not, that means a lot. If you recall over the last few years, there have been those teams, the Padres probably being aid number one, but those teams who engage with players at the last minute and say, hey, wait a minute, what's the price on Aaron Judge? Here's what we're offering. Even if it is more than all the other teams, is it a serious offer? Are you just offering it so that you can win the offseason and so that you can acquire the services of this player for the next couple of years and then you'll figure it out down the road? Is there really a larger game plan? That remains to be seen. So the fact that the Rockies are getting in there early, they've got in there early. Sasaki, interested in a smaller market, could be persuaded by a smaller market. That does mean, it does have to make you think, perhaps the Rockies have a better shot, at least than you thought going into the winter meetings. And I'd have to say, yes, they do have a better shot than I had originally imagined. I still don't know that it is that much. But if you're looking for some hope right now, and you're a Rockies fan, if you're looking for some excitement in the offseason, I think we all are, that's interesting. That is an interesting connection between the Rockies and Roky. Could be. Padres, are they a small market team? Yes, I'd say so. They certainly don't spend it, but they are the little brother to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So it's going to be really interesting to see where Roky Sasaki ends up going. There's a lot of other dominoes that are starting to fall. Max Fried signs an 8-year, $218 million deal with the New York Yankees. Largest deal ever that the Yankees have given out to a left-handed pitcher. So Roky Sasaki is going to have to wait. Does that mean there are going to be some other starting pitchers that end up waiting? Could be. But I think Sasaki is just in a world, in a class unto himself, because it doesn't require typical free agent dollars to sign him. Yes, you're giving up your international bonus pool money. Probably all of it. More likely than not, yes, all of it. But you've already set that money aside. And he's going to get the league minimum this year, next year, 2027, maybe even 2028. That's not a good scenario, because that means Sasaki spent some time in the minors in his first 3 years. But Sasaki to the Rockies, hey, that rhymes. I was so excited about Roky and Rockies that I didn't realize Sasaki and Rockies rhymes. Man, I missed that one right in front of me. Now, can't say I missed this one, but it did finally happen, and the Yankees were interested. The Yankees were knocking, and yet Tyro Estrada did not answer the Yankees' call. He signs a 1-year deal with an option for a second year with the Colorado Rockies. Asterisk, it is pending physical. He is back home in Venezuela, so does got to go through the physical before that becomes official just yet. Rockies also got the Rule 5 draft on Wednesday. Kind of convenient, because they still got room on their 40-man roster to take someone. Is that maybe an indicator? Is that an indicator that they are going to, in fact, take a player, either one to keep, like they did with Anthony Molina in 2024, or like one you offload, like in 2012 when you drafted Mark Canha and then you traded him to the Oakland Athletics? Either way, Rockies have the second overall pick in Wednesday's Rule 5 draft. That'll be at 12 p.m. Mountain Time. A lot of time zone dealing with here. Big on the time zones. But Tyro Estrada is a much more interesting acquisition, I think, than a lot of people probably realize. He's going to be on a 1-year deal that's going to guarantee him $4 million. There's an option for 2026 with a buyout, but because he only has a little bit more than 4 years of service time, again, the Rockies can have him for the next 2 seasons. He's another right-handed bat. him and Kyle Farmer, two right-handers, so you're not going to have a platoon situation at second base. Estrada was not good in 2024, but he was also not healthy. That's, I think, really key to any hope or hype that you might have regarding Tyro Estrada in 2025. He only had two stints on the IL, but even when he was active, he was hurt. He was banged up. So if you give him a pass in 2024 and you look at what he was able to do in 2022, in 2023, you feel a lot better at a player who was a four-win player between those two seasons. And when you consider the fact that Tyro Estrada, in 24 games at Coors Field, has a .348 batting average with a .406 on-base percentage and a .565 slugging percentage, 18 RBI in 21 starts, you say, you know what? I don't really care what he does on the road, but shoot, if we could get something here for 81 games at home, we might really have something here for 81 games at home. 103 OPS plus in 2022 and 2023 combined. So I think that's a nice signing. Kyle Farmer probably is going to get pushed to that utility role. Not probably. He is. Seems a bit of a luxury. I mentioned this earlier today on the show that dropped on Tuesday. You're listening to this probably on Wednesday. Especially if you're on the East Coast. It's already Wednesday morning at this point. But Farmer, going to be a utility guy. That does seem to be a luxury for a team trying to cut payroll, that they're guaranteeing $3.25 million when they've typically just gone with guys making the league minimum. You can go all the way back to Pat Vlaka and say, yeah, that good utility guy off the bench provides a lot of value and is making the league minimum. Instead, you're paying $2.5 million more for a veteran like Kyle Farmer. Seems odd, especially with all of the young second basemen, the young middle infielders still coming up through the system. But Tyro Estrada, interesting signing on its own. Kyle Farmer, we'll see how he's able to fit into the plan. Schmidt did say that, hey, this could allow some guys a few more days off to keep them fresh over the duration of the season. So we'll see how that does indeed play out. What else have we got? We got Estrada. More notes on him. He did play some outfield in the over the course of his career. Not a lot. I don't really foresee that happening. Again, 9 outfielders on your 40-man roster, so we're not going to see that. Did play 24 games in 2023 at shortstop with the Giants, so he can do that. He is capable of that. You're not going to need that very often, of course, with Ezekiel Tovar at shortstop. He's barely played third base, so he might not have a ton of flexibility defensively, but that's where Farmer is going to fit in. Where does he hit in the lineup? Honestly, I could see him possibly batting second for the Rockies on opening day. He's hit everywhere in his career, believe it or not. He's even batted cleanup for the Giants, but we've seen the weird lineups that the Giants do roll out. A lot of those weird lineups have worked for them, certainly at Coors Field. But I could really see Tovar, Estrada, Doyle, especially if Estrada's even a fraction of what he's been in 24 games at Coors Field with a 1,000-plus OPS. Him batting second behind Tovar, in front of Doyle. Maybe if Jones is really right, is Jones going to bat third to split up all the right-handers, and Doyle is hitting cleanup? That's quite all right, too. So Estrada does give you a decent amount of flexibility in that lineup, and he can steal some bases. 44 steals during that 2022-2023 seasons where he was really sharp and really valuable for the Giants. Let's wrap things up here. Dodgers, Mookie Betts is going to get some reps at shortstop. Are there more moves on the way? That sort of remains to be seen. I had my sinking suspicions that Betts might go back to shortstop, but now they got to fill up an entire outfield of players. I know they're kicking the tires on Teoscar Hernandez again for a reunion. They did sign Michael Conforto, 1 year, $17 million. Still haven't figured out how they're going to make Conforto that much better after what we've seen the last 2 years with San Francisco. Dodgers do have some interest in Devin Williams of the Brewers and Tanner Scott, who is a free agent. No deferrals on that max free deal with the New York Yankees. you know, I sort of joked in talking with some people about, well, look, Juan Soto, $800 million, so you can get four $200 million players. So are the Yankees really going to go out and get four more? No, excuse me, three more $200 million players? No, because Soto's making $800 million over 15 years. Fried's making $200 over 8 years. So even if you give out three more $200 million deals over 8 years, that's $800 million over 8 years versus $800 million over 15, nearly double that. So you can't actually do that thing. What else have we got on tap? Aaron Judge, speaking of the Yankees, moving back to right field. It's not going to be needed to play center field since Soto is gone in right. Verdugo was there in left, blocking Judge from any kind of real flexibility. Harrison Bader had left to coincidentally also go to the New York Mets this past year. The Yankees have been interested in Cal Tucker, who some people think maybe he's more of a DH type. I don't know how that fits. Cubs also interested in Tucker. I'm interested if there could be a three-team deal, almost a mega deal, especially when you consider that I'm suggesting the Yankees, Cubs, and Astros all collaborate on a trade. Tucker to the Cubs, Bellinger to the Yankees. Yankees offer something to the Houston Astros. That could fit. That could end up working out. Seiya Suzuki could be on the trading block, especially if the Cubs can't offload Bellinger. Suzuki does not want to be a DH, but his defense has definitely been lacking. Nathan Eovaldi, he's going to return to the Texas Rangers. 3-year deal. Andrés Giménez, this was the one that I was really puzzled by. Guardians trade, arguably the best second baseman in the game. Still probably Marcus Semien. You could throw Jose Altuve in there, of course, if you want, but certainly one of the best, the reigning Gold Glove Award winner, 3-time American League Gold Glove Award winner, Andrés Giménez, sneaky good over the past 3 years. He goes to Toronto for first base, second baseman Spencer Horwitz. Now, Giménez set to have his annual salary increase, going from 5 and change up to 10 this next year, then up to 15 in 26, then 20 plus in 27. That's rich for the Cleveland Guardians. They did sign him to that extension, keep in mind, but he's only 26 years old. And I did not think it made a lot of sense for the Guardians to be acquiring Spencer Horwitz, especially because they've got a lot of second basemen coming up the pipeline, including former Rockies prospect Juan Brito, who the Rockies traded for Nolan Jones. He's over there at second base as a second base, first base option. Josh Naylor's still on the roster. Guardians end up flipping Horwitz to the Pittsburgh Pirates for righty starter Luis Ortiz, the young Luis Ortiz, not the old one you might remember from a few years ago. But they get Luis Ortiz from the Pirates, as well as two prospects in that deal. Jake Berger heading to the Texas Rangers for three prospects. That's another team with two first basemen now. What are you going to do about Nathaniel Lowe? Berger, he's not arbitration eligible yet, so he's very much on the cheap. Let's check the phone and see if there's any new deals that have happened since I started this podcast. Doesn't look like it right now. So you could sort of say three-team deal with the Guardians as that linchpin. And finally, last but not least, at least the Rockies weren't least, and they weren't last, but a little bit disappointing, unfortunately, with the MLB draft lottery, as they were tied for the best odds for the first overall pick at 22.5%. I think they had somewhere around 97.5% chance of being in those lottery picks. The top six picks are actually the lottery. Everything from 7 to 18, the non-playoff teams, everything from 7 to 18 is just in order of the win-loss record. So they do get a top six pick. Marlins don't. Marlins did not get into the lottery despite having the worst record in baseball. No, that's the Chicago White Sox, who also could not pick in the lottery. They also couldn't participate in it. They end up getting the 10th overall pick because as a larger market team, as a payer, they are not eligible for lottery pick 2 years in a row. And the Rockies, they didn't get the first pick. They do get the fourth overall pick in the 2025 MLB draft. Now, because these past 2 years, they've been in the top six, they used their third overall pick on Charlie Condon in 2024, 2025. We'll see who they get in the fourth spot. But the Rockies, like a lot of other teams that receive money from revenue sharing, they will not be eligible for a lottery pick in 2026. They will not. So the highest that the Rockies can draft next year is 10th. They could lose 100 games again. They could lose 121 like the Chicago White Sox. But they will not be selecting, not just in the top six, but in the top nine. 10 is the highest they'll be able to draft next year. The Mariners had less than a 1% chance of getting the first overall pick. And they end up, they're going to go ahead of the Rockies. They get the third overall pick, Angels number two, and the Nationals, who I think had maybe 10% chance of getting the first overall pick. It might have been Matt Adams, former Rocky Matt Adams. That was the representative on the stage, if you ended up watching the show, the announcement. Nationals get the first overall pick, their third time since 2009. So in the last 17 drafts, Nationals get the first overall pick. Rockies still waiting for their first. Didn't happen. Fourth overall pick, look, Jace Lavallette from Texas A&M, probably the first overall pick right now. A lot of that can change. Chase Dolander going into the 2023 draft. A lot of people thought he was the number one guy. Messed with his slider. Tanked his value. Didn't totally destroy it. Was still ninth overall. But nevertheless, you just don't know what can happen between now and July. So what does that mean for Ethan Holiday? What does that mean for the Rockies being able to take the son of Matt Holiday, brother of Jackson Holiday? It doesn't mean much of anything. It doesn't. You know, there's a world in which Holiday could be the best player going into the draft, and yet he still falls to number four because maybe his signing bonus is too much. Look, if you don't pay me this number, I'm going to go to college. I certainly don't need the money per se. Like, I can wait. I can wait for that money and go to college. I'm good. And then get maybe even more money. So here's my number. If the Nats, Angels, and Mariners say no, maybe he gives a discount to the Rockies. I don't know about that, but certainly he might be more inclined to come to Colorado in that fourth spot, whether he is the first and best amateur player going into the 2025 draft, or maybe he's even the 10th. Could the Rockies reach for someone like an Ethan Holiday? Not only bring home the son of Matt. That was clever wordplay that I did not intend to do, talking about Matt Holiday and coming home. Could he possibly have a hand in that? Look, he is a Padre. That means father in Spanish. Wow, I'm gonna have to write this down. This is so bad. It might still be bad, but maybe someone thinks it's good out there. But yeah, maybe Rockies are able to bring home Ethan Holiday and save a little money on top of it. If he's supposed to go 10th, if he's the 10th best amateur next July in the draft, take a little less money to come home. And you know what? Rockies save some money and they're able to go and use it on their next pick. That's one of the benefits of drafting higher, having a high draft pick, is that you get the money that comes with the pick. So Rockies bummed that they're not going to have that first overall pick money, but they're still going to be okay. And in every round after the first, the Rockies will have the second overall pick. Keep that in mind. So just the first round is the lottery. After that, second pick in every round, right after the 121 loss, Chicago White Sox, will be the Rockies following right after. Follow me on social media. Good job. Good segue, bud. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, at Rockies Insider. Don't know if I'll have another show on Wednesday. Got an invite from the boys over at Blake Street Banner. So they're launching a new show. It's called Best of the West, where they're going to focus on a lot of major league stuff, mostly the NL West, naturally. There are other teams in the division. How does what those NL West teams do factor in with what the Rockies are going to do? Can the Rockies learn from the other teams in their division? I'm pretty interested in this show, and I was actually pretty honored to get the invitation over on Best of the West from Blake Street Banner. So you'll hear me there from an airport somewhere. I'll be calling in and participating, and really curious how that show goes. Their initial launch, the maiden voyage of Best in the West over on Blake Street Banner, their YouTube channel and their podcast. So yeah, excited for that one. Excited for what day three is going to bring with the Rule 5 draft. Got breakfast in the morning with Bud Black and the rest of the managers. That will be a good time. So I appreciate you sticking around and providing me with a good time. Hopefully I did the same for you. But as I like to say, the momentum that my audience can bring me, look, it can only be as good as my next show. That's why I keep grinding. Maybe that's why I keep changing rooms is because I'm trying to mix up the look in the background. Appreciate you. That momentum. Got to keep it going tomorrow. See ya.